So in Isaiah chapter 36, grab your pencil or pen, as I do have a number of notes that if you've got room for them, I think it'll be helpful for you. You're about to see that the argument that the Assyrian king Sennacherib is going to make through his representative Rabshakeh is of 6 points. So I'm going to show you where there are 6 different arguments that take place in the 36th chapter. But first, make the note up there at verse 1 that almost word for word, but not quite, everything we're about to read in Isaiah 36 through 39, the chapters 36 through 39, can be found in 2 Kings chapter 18 and verses, chapter 18 verse 13 through chapter 20 verse 19. So it's odd that it doesn't match as far as the chapter and verses were put in. But 2 Kings chapter 18 verse 13 through chapter 20 verse 19 is extremely similar to these chapters, 36, 37, 38, and 39. And then it begins thusly in verse 1. It came about in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and seized them. Now, I also added in my Bible, to be helpful for you, I suppose, that Hezekiah ruled from 715 to 686 B.C. 715 to 686 B.C. So this is all here in the center, dead center, of Hezekiah's rule over Judah. And the date for this, the 14th year then, by common acceptance, is 701 B.C. We always use B.C. In the video, they used B.C.E. Can somebody tell me what B.C.E. stands for?
Before Common Era.
Before Common Era. Now, wanting to get away from Christ, the old B.C., which stood for Before Christ, has been replaced in modern parlance with B.C.E. Kind of odd. It still has the B.C., but now it stands for Common Era. And then if you see that something took place in 36 C.E., what would that be? 36 Common Era, so 6 years after Jesus was crucified and raised from the dead. So they've just taken, you know, the reference Anno Domini in that case, which meant in the year of our Lord, the old A.D., and made it C.E., thus making it uniform before or after Christ. That will eliminate Christ. And we'll just call it before Common Era and after Common Era. Christ is the one who established the Common Era, and rightly so. So we're in 701 B.C. right here, and if you've still got room for it, Sennacherib himself ruled from 705 B.C. to 681 B.C. So he reigns from, Hezekiah reigning from 715 to 686. Sennacherib became king 10 years after Hezekiah had already been ruling. But Hezekiah is going to die 5 years before Sennacherib does. So these events take place in 701 B.C., dead center in the 715 to 686 that Hezekiah reigned, and there only 4 years after Sennacherib took the throne. In verse 2, the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Lachish. It is probably better pronounced Lachish. That's what I hear in Israel when I'm over there. We're used to saying Lachish, but Lachish is probably closer to the original. The king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem to King Hezekiah with a large army, and he stood by the conduit of the upper pool on the highway of the Fuller's Field. Now, I do want to be careful here. Many times we've referenced this as we've been coming through Isaiah, and I've said repeatedly, Sennacherib this, Sennacherib that, Sennacherib the other. Sennacherib is not actually present at Jerusalem. Where is Sennacherib? Lachish. Rabshakeh is his representative. Rabshakeh was sent up to Jerusalem. Sennacherib is busy with Lachish. So the king sends Rabshakeh. Now probably Rabshakeh is not a personal name. It'd be closer to saying general, you know, something like that. It appears to be a title and not a personal name. But very high-ranking authority. He's got a high army. He's a general of some kind. In verse 3, Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna, the scribe, and Joash, the son of Asaph, the recorder, came out to him. Then Rabsha said to them, "Say now to Hezekiah, thus says the great king, the king of Assyria, what is this confidence that you have?" Argument number one is verses 5 and 6. Argument 1, verses 5 and 6. Rabsha continues, "I say, your counsel and strength for the war are only empty words. Now on whom do you rely that you have rebelled against me? Behold, you rely on the staff of this crushed reed on Egypt, on which if a man leans, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to all who rely on him." Now, again, if you can make the note, somewhere at verses 5 and 6, I'm going to reference here and read for you Isaiah chapter 30, verse 1 and 2, and then I'll read also Isaiah chapter 31 and verse 1. In Isaiah 30, verses 1 and 2, which we studied 2 weeks ago, it says, "Woe to the rebellious children, declares the Lord, who execute a plan, but not mine, and make an alliance, but not of my spirit, in order to add sin to sin, who proceed down to Egypt without consulting me, to take refuge in the safety of Pharaoh, and to seek shelter in the shadow of Egypt." 31:1 says, "Woe to those who go down to Egypt for help, and rely on horses, and trust in chariots, because they're many, and in horsemen, because they're very strong, but they do not look to the Holy One of Israel, nor seek the Lord." I made the point 2 weeks ago, this is all in the context of the history of 36 through 39, and the people were, in fact, trying to get help from Egypt, and in the argument point number one, then, that Rabshakeh, in the name of Sennacherib, is making, that Egypt is weak, is he right or wrong? He's absolutely right. He's right. He's figured out what God has already declared in warning to these people. So argument number one, Egypt is weak, certainly true. In verse 7, you have argument number 2. "But if you say to me," Rabshakeh speaking, "if you, Hezekiah, say to me, we trust in Yahweh our God." Remember, we spent a lot of time on this in the chronological study. In my Bible and in most Bibles, if you see Lord spelled with all capitals, then that indicates that you've got that word, Yahweh or Jehovah, the tetragrammaton they call it, the four letters that represent the actual personal name of God, so often translated Lord. So we trust in Yahweh, our God. It's very personal. Not the Assyrian God, not the Babylonian God, no other God, Yahweh. "If you say to me, we trust in Yahweh, our God, is it not he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah has taken away and has said to Judah and to Jerusalem, you shall worship before this altar?" Is that argument true? No, that argument's totally false. His argument is Hezekiah has offended Yahweh because Hezekiah tore Yahweh's altars down. What has he actually done here? Sennacherib knows this. He sent Rabshakeh to talk about it. In the actual historical event, what did Sennacherib do? Bill? Is that your hand that's talking about?
Sennacherib or Hezekiah?
Sennacherib's argument is that Hezekiah tore down Yahweh's altars. Is that true?
No.
What did Hezekiah tear down?
He took away the high
places. He takes away idolatrous altars. What had happened to the 10 northern kingdoms that had been conquered by Assyria 17 years before this guy starts to reign? 17 years before Sennacherib comes to power, Assyria fell. That Assyria conquered the 10 northern kingdoms in 722 B.C. But what had started with the death of Solomon was that Jeroboam, son of Nebat, had done what regarding altars? He built two calf altars. He was the one that destroyed the worship of Yahweh that was properly done in Judea and in Jerusalem. So Sennacherib has heard the history, but he's misunderstood it and turned it backwards. Hezekiah was worshiping Yahweh. Hezekiah was tearing down the idolatrous altars, not Yahweh's altars. Hezekiah had been faithful where the ten northern tribes had not, and at this point had fallen 15 years ago, 22 years ago, as a matter of fact, as these events are going on, 15 years before he starts to reign, 17. So this event shows, though, brethren, that they had their intelligence, they had their spies, they understood what was going on in these countries. He just didn't fully understand it and kind of got it reversed in the second argument. Well, see, that's true, I guess, in a sort of a mental or a spiritual sense. But physically, Hezekiah never tore down any altars that belonged to Yahweh. And so he's couching it in terms of those altars coming down. But you're right. Did they go to Egypt and try to seek help? Well, apparently. So now comes argument number three. This is verses 8 and 9. Now, therefore, come make a bargain with my master, the king of Assyria, and I'll give you 2,000 horses if you're able on your part to set riders on them. How then can you repulse one official of the least of my master's servants and rely on Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? Argument number three. Judah's army is tiny. I can give you military equipment. You couldn't even find the guys to run it, is his argument. That argument, of course, is true. And in verse 9, how can you repulse one official? That official is Rabshakeh, who's there with his great army, telling in now three different ways Hezekiah got in a hole. Argument number 4 is verse 10. Have I now come up without the Lord's approval against this land to destroy it? The Lord said to me, go up against this land and destroy it. You'll note both times, what God's name did Rabshakeh use? Yahweh. That's the name he used. He says, God sent me. Is that argument true? Sure. But does he really know that? From his standpoint, see, I'm knocking over 46 cities, and I'm going to carve it into cuneiform writings, and you'll find them 2,700 years from now. I did knock over all those cities. That must be your God surrendering. That must be your God sending me to do this. This is your God cooperating with me. Well, kinda. Kinda. But not because he was thinking positively that he wanted to serve God, only that he was being successful. Verse 11, Eliakim and Shebna and Joah said to Rabshakeh, speak now your servants in Aramaic, for we understand it, and do not speak with us in Judean, and the hearing of the people who are on the wall. But Rabshakeh said, has my master sent me only to your master and to you to speak these words, not to the men who sit on the wall, who are doomed to eat their own dung and drink their own urine with you? Then Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice in Judean, and said, that's pretty interesting. Why do you suppose Sennacherib sent Rabshakeh with an army? Well, for one thing, the guy could speak the native language. And how he got to learn that language beats me. But he knew how to speak it. So he does. Verse 13. Hear the words of the great king, the king of Assyria. Thus says the king, do not let Hezekiah deceive you, for he will not be able to deliver you. Nor let Hezekiah make you trust in Yahweh, saying, Yahweh will surely deliver us. This city shall not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Then he gives his argument number 5 in verses 16 and 17. Do not listen to Hezekiah, for thus says the king of Assyria, make your peace with me and come out to me, and eat each of you his vine and each of his fig tree and drink each of the waters of his own cistern until I come and take you away to a land like your own land, a land of grain and new wine, a land of bread and vineyards. So argument number five is, you're going to like my captivity. You're going to like me ruling over you. First, I'm not going to kill you. If you'll surrender, you can stay right at home and eat. But now when I do take you out of the land, that is his plan, you're going to go to a land that's just as good, better. So he tries now to entice them with, no problem, it'll be great. All I got to do is just surrender. Argument number six is verses 18 through 20. Beware lest Hezekiah mislead you, saying, Yahweh will deliver us. Has any one of the gods of the nations delivered his land from the hand of the king of Assyria? Where are the gods of Hamath and Arpad? Where are the gods of Sepharvaim? And when they have delivered Samaria from my hand, when have they delivered Samaria from my hand? Who among all the gods of these lands have delivered their land from my hand, that Yahweh should deliver Jerusalem from my hand? But they were silent and answered him not a word, for the king's command was, do not answer him. And then Eliakim the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, Shebna the scribe, and Joel the son of Asaph the recorder, came to Hezekiah with their clothes torn and told him the words of Rabshakeh 37:1. And when King Hezekiah heard, he tore his clothes, covered himself with sackcloth, and entered the house of Yahweh. Then he sent Eliakim, who was over the household with Shebna the scribe, the elders of the priests, covered with sackcloth, to Isaiah the prophet, son of Amos. And they said to him, thus says Hezekiah, this day is a day of distress, rebuke, and rejection, for children have come to birth, and there's no strength to deliver. Perhaps Yahweh your God will hear the words of Rabshakeh, whom his master the king of Assyria has sent to reproach the living God, and will rebuke the words which Yahweh your God has heard. Therefore, offer a prayer for the remnant that is left. Now, they're really laying it on pretty thick. Isaiah, oh, we're really with you. You know, twice, your God's our God. That's the God we're serving. So, you know, pray for us. Now, in 6, Isaiah said to them, thus you shall say to your master, thus says Yahweh, do not be afraid because of the words that you've heard with which the servants of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me. Behold, I'll put a spirit in him so that he shall hear a rumor and return to his own land, and I'll make him fall by the sword in his own land. Then Rabshakeh returned and found the king of Assyria fighting against Libna, for he had heard that the king had left Lachish. Why would the king leave Lachish? Because he'd leveled it. And he wrote about it in his prison, on his walls, wrote about it in other places where they discovered cuneiform writings from Sennacherib. So he had succeeded in defeating Lachish. Now, Don and I have both been to Lachish on the first trip together. On the second trip when I went, I was able to do what we weren't able to on the first trip, which was to actually get up on the top. It's a phenomenal sight. I'm thinking that I may kind of jump the history a little bit, but because we're doing this tonight, I'm thinking on Sunday night I'll probably give you a lesson on Lachish itself so you can see more about this site and some other historical information regarding all that. So I think that's what we'll do on Sunday night. We'll dig into this a little bit deeper. But at any rate, we're in chapter 37 now, and Isaiah has told the people, told the king, don't worry about it, it's going to be okay. Now then in 8, 37 verse 8, Rabshakeh returned and found the king of Assyria fighting against Libna, for he heard that the king had left Lachish. When he heard them say concerning Tirhakah, king of Cush, right in the margin, Cush is the country we call Ethiopia. Outstanding, you got that. He's come out to fight against you. And when he heard it, he sent messengers to Hezekiah saying, thus you shall say to Hezekiah, king of Judah, do not let your God in whom you trust deceive you, saying, Jerusalem shall not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Behold, you heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all the lands destroying them completely. So will you be spared? Did the gods of those nations which my fathers have destroyed deliver them? Gozan and Haran and Rezeph and the sons of Eden who are in Telassar? Where is the king of Hamath, the king of Arpad, the king of the city of Sepharvaim, Hena and Iva? Then Hezekiah took the letter, apparently all this was written in a letter, from the hand of the messengers and read it, and he went up to the house of the Lord and spread it out before the Lord. And I'll stop there for just one more note. Brethren, it's hard to know what's going on in verse 7. In verse 7, it says, Isaiah said, I will put a spirit in Sennacherib so that he'll hear a rumor and return to his own land. Now, the only rumor that we're guessing this might be talking about, because if this isn't it, then we don't have a clue, nobody does, is verse 9. In verse 9, when he heard them say, well, it'd be a rumor, concerning Tirhaka, king of Ethiopia, Cush, he's come out to fight against you. When he heard it, he sent messengers to Hezekiah and said, I'll get you anyway. So God says through Isaiah, he's going to hear a rumor, and he's going to leave. Those two don't have to be necessarily connected. And apparently this Ethiopian, Cushite, never showed up. If that's not the explanation, you know, I don't know what it is. We think that would be the rumor in verse 9. So if you want to circle rumor and then point down at verse 9, that's the best I can do for you. Otherwise, it's been lost to us here 2,700 years later, 2,800 years later. So now Hezekiah takes the letter. We're reading down in chapter 37 at verse 15. Hezekiah prayed to the Lord, saying, O Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, who is enthroned above the cherubim, you are the God, you alone of all the kingdoms of the earth. You have made heaven and earth. Incline your ear, O Yahweh, and hear. Open your eyes, O Yahweh, and see. And listen to all the words of Sennacherib, who sent to reproach the living God. Truly, O Yahweh, the kings of Assyria have devastated all the countries and their lands. They have cast their gods into the fire, for they were not gods, but the work of men's hands, wood and stone. So they have destroyed them. And now, O Yahweh, our God, deliver us from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you alone, Yahweh, are God. Now, brethren, some of the things that Sennacherib says, though very few, he says things differently than the text does, so that he'll make himself look better. Which one is the more full and accurate account? The biblical account. So now we know what the six arguments were from Hezekiah. We know that Isaiah said, don't you worry a bit about it. We know that he's going to hear a rumor, Sennacherib is. We also know that he's going to leave, and we know where he's going to die. It's in his own land. That's not going to happen for 20 years. He won't die in his own land till 681. But what we have is faithful souls in the face of all the world is in flames, and now the last city in our country, in Judah, in Jerusalem, has Rabshakeh standing at the gates. Please note, Rabshakeh does not set up all the ramps and all that kind of stuff. He's just come and delivered the ultimatum. Hezekiah prays. Verse 21. Then Isaiah, the son of Amos, sent to Hezekiah, saying, thus is Yahweh, the God of Israel, because you have prayed to me about Sennacherib, king of Assyria, this is the word that the Lord has spoken against him. She, and that's a reference to Assyria, has despised you and mocked you, the virgin daughter of Zion. She, that's Assyria, has shaken her head behind you, the daughter of Jerusalem. Whom have you reproached and blasphemed? Against whom have you raised your voice and haughtily lifted up your eyes? Again, now he's addressing Sennacherib. Against the Holy One of Israel. Through your servants, you have reproached the Lord. And you said, with my many chariots, I come up to the heights of the mountains, to the remotest parts of Lebanon. I cut down its tall cedars and its choice cypresses. I'll go to its highest peak, its thickest forest. I dug wells and drank waters, and with the sole of my feet, I dried up all the rivers of Egypt. And what that sounds like is he's got carried away and is portraying himself as so big as he could do this. And the Nile would stop flowing. That's a pretty arrogant guy there. But he thinks he's tough. And so, in 26, have you not heard? Now God speaks to Sennacherib. Have you not heard? Long ago, I did it. Yahweh did it, not Sennacherib. From ancient times I planned it, this fall of Egypt. Now I brought it to pass, that you should turn fortified cities into ruinous heaps. I, Yahweh, commanded that, and you, Sennacherib, did my bidding. Quit your boasting about it, because I'm the one that gave it to you. 27. Therefore, their inhabitants were short of strength. They were dismayed and put to shame. They were as the vegetation of the field, and as the green herb, as grass on the housetops, is scorched before it grown up. But I know you're sitting down, and you're going out, and you're coming in, and you're raging against me. Because of your raging against me, and because your arrogance has come up to my ears, therefore I'll put my hook in your nose, and my bridle in your lips, and I'll turn you back by the way which you came. Then this shall be the sign for you. You shall eat this year what grows of itself, in the second year, what springs from the same. And in the third year, sow, reap, plant vineyards, and eat their fruit. And the surviving remnant of the house of Judah shall again take root downward and bear fruit upward. Oh, yeah, you can rock and stomp for a couple of years. But my people are going to be back to planting and doing just what they were doing before when I'm through with you. 32. For out of Jerusalem shall go forth a remnant, and out of Mount Zion survivors. The zeal of the Lord of hosts shall perform this. Therefore, thus says the Lord concerning the king of Assyria, he shall not come to this city or shoot an arrow here. Neither shall he come before it with a shield, nor throw up a mound against it. By the way that he came, by the same he shall return. And he shall not come to this city, declares Yahweh. For I will defend this city to save it for my own sake, and for my servant David's sake. Then the angel of the Lord went out and struck 185,000 in the camp of the Assyrians. Now that Rabshakeh had a pretty big army, didn't he? And when men arose early in the morning, behold, all of these were dead. So Sennacherib, king of Assyria, departed and returned home and lived at Nineveh. And it came about as he was worshiping in the house of Nisroch, his god, 20 years later, in 681, that Adrammelech and Sharezer, his sons, killed him with the sword, and they escaped into the land of Ararat, and Esarhaddon, his son, became king in his place. The Assyrian records say that his sons killed him, apparently, they say, by toppling his god's statue on his head. Is that how he died? No. How was he killed? With a sword. That's the way God said it was going to be. So again, it was a fanciful thing that they made out of it on the Assyrian record. This is the actual record. So Sennacherib ruled from 705 B.C. to 681 B.C. He died 20 years at the hands of his sons, wielding a sword, after he left Lachish in success, and went to Libna, where Rabshakeh found him, and 185,000 Assyrians are what? Dead all around the walls of Jerusalem. So Sennacherib said, well, looks like it's time to go home. Okay? He never did come. He never shot an arrow. Never put up the siege ramps. And the historical record that the scriptures had for everybody to read for 2,700 years till they found it in the 1800s was absolutely correct. And in virtually every case, Sennacherib confirmed it, as well as you saw in the video. Okay, so now, 2 Kings, make a note at the top of chapter 38. 2 Kings chapter 20, verses 1 through 11, is a tiny bit more detailed than the first 8 verses of Isaiah. So if you want to go back, you can read, it's almost the same. There's a little bit more. We're going to stay here. In those days, Hezekiah became mortally ill. And Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, came to him and said to him, "Thus says Yahweh, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live." Hezekiah turned his face to the wall and prayed to the Lord and said, "Remember now, O Yahweh, I beseech you, how I have walked before you in truth and with a whole heart, and have done what is good in your sight." And Hezekiah wept bitterly. I would that every one of us could pray that prayer. That wasn't arrogance, and that's not met with, "Oh yeah, well, not so." Apparently he was that kind of guy. He could argue from that standpoint. So in verse 4, where the Lord came to Isaiah saying, "Go and say to Hezekiah, thus says Yahweh, the God of your father David, I've heard your prayer, I've seen your tears, behold, I'll add 15 years to your life. And I will deliver you and this city from the hand of the king of Assyria, and I'll defend this city, and this shall be the sign to you from Yahweh, that the Yahweh will do this thing that he has spoken. Behold, I'll cause the shadow on the stairway, which has gone down with the sun on the stairway of Ahaz, to go back 10 steps. So the sun shadow went back 10 steps on the stairway on which it had gone down. So he turned time back. Writing now verse 9 of Hezekiah, king of Judah, after his illness and his recovery, right in the margin of verse 10, he's 39 years old. And in verse 10, at the age of 39, he said, "In the middle of my life, 70 years are by reason of strength, 80, he's 39, in the middle of my life, I am to enter the gates of Sheol. I am to be deprived of the rest of my years. I said, I shall not see Yahweh, Yahweh in the land of the living. I shall look on man no more among the inhabitants of the world. Like a shepherd's tent, my dwelling is pulled up and removed from me. As a weaver, I rolled up my life. He cuts me off from the loom. From day until night, you make an end of me. I composed my soul," they add, "until morning. Like a lion, so he breaks all my bones. From day until night, you make an end of me. Like a swallow, like a crane, so I twitter. I moan like a dove. My eyes look wistfully to the heights. O Lord, I am oppressed. Be my security. What shall I say? For he has spoken to me, and he himself has done it. I shall wander about all my years because of the bitterness of my soul. O Lord, by these things men live, and in all these is the life of my spirit. O restore me to health, and let me live. For my own welfare I had great bitterness. It is you who has kept my soul from the pit of nothingness. For you I cast all my sins behind your back. You have cast all my sins behind your back. For Sheol cannot thank you. Death cannot praise you. Those who go down to the pit cannot hope for your faithfulness. It is the living who give thanks to you, as I do today. The father tells his sons about your faithfulness. Yahweh will surely save me. So we will play my songs on stringed instruments all the days of our life at the house of the Lord." Now that is apparently more prayer, or another prayer, that Hezekiah prayed before he got the word that he was going to live. Now Isaiah had said, 21, "Let them take a cake of figs and apply it to the boil that he may recover." Then Hezekiah had said, "What is the sign that I shall go up to the house of the Lord?" Now, I don't quite understand that last sentence, and it almost seems like it's out of order in the text right there. It may reference something we don't know anything about. But you have two places, the prayer of Hezekiah. You have Isaiah's response. You have God's promise he'll add 15 more years. And sure enough, he lived to the age of 54. That's how it played out. Billy has a comment.
That last verse where it says,
Exactly. That's why I said it seemed like I ought to go back to that part there. But, yeah, I don't know. Let me have the extra minutes and finish 39. It's only got 8 verses, and then we'll be done. At that time, Merodach-Baladan, son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he had heard that he had been sick and had recovered. Hezekiah was pleased and showed them all his treasure house, the silver and the gold and the spices and the precious oil and his whole armory and all that was found in his treasuries. There was nothing in his house nor in all his domain that Hezekiah did not show them. Then Isaiah the prophet came to King Hezekiah and said to him, "What did these men say, and from where had they come to you?" Hezekiah said, "They have come to me from a far country, from Babylon." He said, "What have they seen in your house?" So Hezekiah answered, "They have seen all that's in my house. There is nothing among my treasuries that I have not shown them." Then Isaiah said to Hezekiah, "Hear the word of Yahweh of hosts. Behold, the days are coming when all that is in your house and all that your fathers have laid up in store to this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, says the Lord. And some of your sons who shall issue from you, whom you shall beget, shall be taken away, and they shall become officials in the palace of the king of Babylon." And Hezekiah said to Isaiah, "The word of Yahweh which you have spoken is good." For he thought, "There will be peace and truth in my days." Well, surely, this is 80 years away from when it'll actually take place. And so he's going to die in another 15 years, but it'd be long after his time that this is going to take place. I mentioned that, we were coming through a chronological study Bible, and I know the salmon swimming upstream here, but I strongly disagree with those who suggest that if Hezekiah had just not shown his treasury, everything would have been okay. He's being reprimanded, and all this is going to happen 80 years later because he showed everybody what was in his treasury. I don't think that's the case at all. I think that there was nothing wrong with him showing the treasury. It's never condemned or criticized in any way in Scripture. But it was used by Isaiah, as God filled him with the Spirit to do it, to say that's how complete Judah's destruction will be when the time comes 80 years from now. So, it wasn't his fault, isn't it? Hezekiah made this happen. It's the sins of the people that made it happen. It's just illustrated by the event. Thank you. That's 2 minutes extra, but Carol had a hand up. I had to squash her.
I was just going to say, if you killed your father with a sword, push the God over on the top of him to disguise.
Oh, yeah, okay, may have been. There's a plausible explanation where they're trying to, rid themselves of the blame. Okay, appreciate it. Okay, well, thanks everybody. A couple of extra minutes. Have a good night.